We are in the middle of a study of the basic text from which the Vipassana meditation arises, namely the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. In this talk, we continue with the second foundation, which is known in Pali as Vedana, or mindfulness of feeling. At the start, let's clarify the text's use of the word feeling. Contrary to our own common usage, the word does not connote emotion. Here, feeling refers to the quality of pleasantness, unpleasantness, or neutrality that, to some degree, accompanies every moment of consciousness. So a brief reading from the scriptures, the Buddha's actual words regarding mindfulness of feeling tone. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu abide contemplating feelings as feelings? Here, when a pleasant feeling, a bhikkhu understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. When feeling a painful feeling, he understands, I feel a painful feeling. When feeling a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. He continues to talk about the way that insight arises from this noticing of feeling. In this way, he abides contemplating feelings as feelings internally, or he abides contemplating feelings as feelings externally, or he abides contemplating feelings as feelings both internally and externally. Or else he abides contemplating in feelings their nature of arising, or he abides contemplating in feelings their nature of vanishing, or he abides contemplating in feelings their nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else, mindfulness that there is feeling is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. And he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a bhikkhu abides, contemplating feelings as feelings. According to the wheel of dependent origination, this feeling tone occurs upon contact between the stimulus and the sense organs. Almost immediately, pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant register, although the conscious mind tends to skip over this essential step in the experience. All three varieties of experience, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, arise from causes and conditions that are largely unknowable. This is karma, or more precisely, vipaka. The mere existence of the pleasant or unpleasant is not a problem. By themselves, these experiences of feeling tone simply are. For example, take pleasant. For most of us, the taste of coffee. The pleasantness is instantly followed by liking, enjoying. So far, no problem. The mind can be quite clear, even as we take joy in the experience of pleasant, of liking the coffee. The next link in the chain or wheel, however, describes the crux of our dilemma. This is when we begin to cling and grasp, wanting more, wanting it to stay. And it's here that the cycle of suffering sets in. During craving, there is the sense that this experience will really do it for me. It's important to hang out here and notice this. Curiosity is one of the essentials, because we get locked into reacting and lose sight of how the process happens. Similarly, If the experience registers as unpleasant, we habitually react by quickly resisting or running and hiding. As we well know, this reaction actually increases the associated fear, as well as the power of the stimulus. We spend much of our time trying to manipulate our experience from pleasant, unpleasant to pleasant. Also, as we react, papancha, or the proliferation of thought, arises. And regardless of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, we create stories where the mind gets caught and mired down. The stories continue to snowball, and soon we are far removed from the actual experience, living once again in thoughts and stories rather than life. In the case of a stimulus which registers as neither pleasant nor unpleasant, the mind tends to zone out or become bored, both of which are forms of delusion. This neutral ground offers less drama or charge, making it more difficult to discern. Actually, the experience of neither pleasant nor unpleasant is rich with possibility for freedom, simply because there is less drama or charge. With adequate mindfulness in this moment, the mind becomes alert and equanimous, sitting peacefully in the midst of it all. This is a moment of freedom. Donald Rothberg points out that Vedana is not inherent in the nature of the object itself. Rather, it is our perception that colors the experience. Unless we make a conscious intent and an effort to do so, however, we don't even notice how much of our life is driven in this way by our circumstances. Donald tells the story of an episode of drug dealing at an L.A. convenience store parking lot that continued until the owner decided the way to eliminate that was to begin piping Mantovani music into the lot. He began to pipe Mantovani into the lot, and he was right. The drug dealing stopped, apparently, because the people involved found Mantovani so unpleasant. So here also, at this juncture between the feeling tone and the reaction, grasping, aversion, or zoning out, there between the two is the core of the Buddha's insight called the Second Noble Truth. We bring to each experience two essential elements. One, our conditioned habits, which lead inevitably to suffering, and second, their roots in deep ignorance. We encounter the actual experience, contact, feeling, followed by craving or aversion. And the consequences are described in the wheel of dependent origination as becoming, or the continuation of samsara, the round of suffering. So let's connect the first and second foundations of mindfulness. The body continually presents experiences for the mind to notice as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Working with the body is the rich field for development of mindfulness and carefully noting Vedana, or the feeling tone, as it arises. This is how insight results. Take, for example, pain in the body. Pain is a good object of meditation because the mind can become quite concentrated with little wandering. It's a compelling experience. There's a tendency to tense in reaction to pain, which is an expression of aversion. This creates an unbalanced state of mind and an experience of the pain as a solid mass. When the mind is relaxed, however, the pain is simply seen and allowed, and experienced more as a changing flow. Other examples in practice situations are examples where mindfulness of feeling tone can lead to freedom. One might be wanting peace of mind or enlightenment. Another example might be judging a neighbor's noises or judging how I'm doing. Longing for the bell to ring. Doubting this stupid practice. All of these are vehicles for awakening, given the arising of mindfulness. The importance of mindfulness of feeling cannot be overstated. Buddhist teacher Reginald Ray states, and I quote, "The whole of the spiritual path occurs between feeling and craving." The whole of the spiritual path occurs between feeling and craving. There's another story that beautifully demonstrates the entire process. A traveler is standing on the bank of a rapidly moving river. In the distance upstream, she notices a boat approaching. There's music and singing, and as the boat nears, she notices that the people are aboard, eating and drinking and dancing and generally making merry. They motion for her to join them, and she wades out to the boat and climbs on. For a time, she thoroughly enjoys the ride and the company and the gaiety. But she tires of the constancy and disembarks, wading back to shore. Soon another boat appears, and as it approaches, she sees that there are military warriors, weapons, a brass band playing marches, which seems to be feeding the shouting and the harsh gesturing of those aboard. However, she finds the whole scene compelling and wades out to the boat to climb aboard. For a time, she joins enthusiastically in the songs of pride and combat. Rather farther on downstream, however, she again tires of this scene and disembarks, wading to shore. As the traveler rests again on the shore, a third boat appears, seemingly uninhabited except for one word scrawled across the bow. It says in very large lettering, "Me." Certain that this is the boat she has been looking for, she once again wades out and climbs aboard. Once again, she rides the "Me" boat for some distance, but then tires of the ride and climbs back to rest on the shore. These are the three boats of greed, hatred, and delusion, known as the three root defilements from which all others spring. The traveler is you and me. We become captivated by the scenes before us and their appeal to our greed, hatred, and delusion. We then ride them downstream in life until the arising of insight shows us their true nature. The shore is the body, a place of rest. From a deeply centered mindfulness of the body, we can simply watch as the boats go by. So what do we notice when we pay attention to feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Well, as already has been said, we notice a manifestation of some sort in the body. There is always a bodily component to feeling tone. We notice that there is a story connected with feeling, interpretations and judgments, and they have an eye that it seems to be happening to. If we notice, watch clearly, we notice that there are changes moment to moment, indicating the impermanent nature of feeling tone. And a quiet, focused attention allows us to see the experience of not I, rather than creating an I about whom the story revolves. This is the true meaning of anatta, or no self. The experience is seen to simply stand on its own. It is not happening to anyone. Mindfulness of Vedana, or feeling tone, is particularly important in the development of insight. If it's freedom we want, we really must find out what is here, seeing the truth of the moment. Gil Fronsdale speaks of this urgency when he says, "If you want to be a wise person, study how you lose your ease. Open all the sense doors, watch the mind, meet the feeling tone fully with hospitality. Don't get involved, just receive." In this way, although Vedana always colors each experience, it doesn't get to make the decisions. The poem by Mark Coleman. Your only duty is to try not to run from here, from this. Even if the hole of loss burns deep into your soft belly, even if on waking you feel the dread of walking into the day raw, stripped bare, and it feels like the mind will finally pierce those empty places that lay open and exposed. At times in this life, you don't have a choice but to pick up where you left off, to make a cup of tea, to sit quietly in the garden of your creation and take in the day, to turn towards exactly where you are. You could always pretend, try putting on a face other than your own, or try avoiding the whole damn thing. But that's a game that's never worked, and only burns a deeper hole inside the pocket of longing, and makes the shell you've chosen to live in even more empty. But when you surrender to embrace your loneliness, the starved parts of your being, and you touch the void that you've spent a lifetime running from with delicate hands of love, the way the evening fog envelops the solitary tree, without flinching, pressing into and loving every gnarled crevice, every twisted branch, even the forgotten needles fall into the ground. This is the first step that begins the slow journey of completeness, keeps inviting you deeper into the roots of yourself, claiming your place that has been waiting, that is always right here. So once again, some practical suggestions for working with feeling tone. Now, of course, the first is bring attention to the strong feeling tone. Stay at the sensation level. Investigate. Watch it change. Watch for reactivity in thoughts or emotions, the creation of stories. This indicates strong conditioning is present. Try working for 3 to 5 minutes with only neutral. Check in with feeling tone regularly during a sitting. Track feeling tone for a meal or for an entire sitting. Track its arising and passing away. Track when a feeling tone leads to suffering, and say ouch if unpleasant is noticed. Mindfulness of these conditioned reactions to feeling offers freedom in the midst of them. This is truly the heart of the practice. In addition to its leading to freedom for the practitioner, working with Vedana is crucial in decreasing reactivity in the world. Compassion for oneself and others, spaciousness and equanimity grow from the heart like flowers in the spring. We'll close with words from The Sinzin Ming, Verses on the Faith Mind by Sengstan. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see truth, hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the dis-ease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. Rest and unrest derive from illusion. With enlightenment, there is no liking and disliking. All dualities come from ignorant inference. They are like dreams or flowers in the air, foolish to try to grasp them. Gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. One thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. Words. The way is beyond language, for in it there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today.